Welcome to the Quality of Mind Transforming Business podcast, where we explore the game-changing understanding that can unlock new levels of performance and well-being in the workplace. If you want to be part of the new breed of leaders in business, if you're fed up with the conventional echo chamber, and if you want to be part of a revolution in human potential, then join us to discover the powerful resource that lives before our psychology.
Welcome to the Quality of Mind Transforming Business podcast series. And today's episode, I've got another interview lined up. And this one, listeners, I think is going to be a little different. Variety is the spice of life. So I think my guest's a little different to the people I often have on here. I think you'll find out soon when he introduces himself. But all I'll say is he's a hugely, highly prolific expert and producer of content in the field of personal professional development, working on your game. So I won't say too much more because I want him to introduce himself, but we're going to have a fascinating conversation about what we both see about the nature of human potential. And hopefully you'll find some insight and realization in that. So welcome to the show, Dre Baldwin.
Oh, I'm excited to be here, Pierce. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. Thanks for reaching out. It's great. So, Dre, can you give listeners just a minute or two on your background and how come you do what you do and we're talking?
Sure. So, background is as a professional athlete, played basketball professionally overseas. So, I'm in the United States from Philadelphia, now based in South Florida. So, overseas for us means outside of America. So, I played professionally outside of the USA for 9 years, traveling 8 different countries. While doing that, started putting videos on this brand new website called YouTube back in 2005. Mm-hmm. That's where I started to build a name for myself on the internet. So most of the people who know me, if somebody knows me in the streets, it's not because I was a pro athlete, it's because of YouTube. So I started putting videos for basketball up there. The athletes who were following me eventually started asking questions about mindset, just because they learned a little bit about my background, because I only played 1 year in high school, walked on to play at the third tier of college sports, which usually does not equate to a professional athlete career. So I started talking about things like discipline and confidence and mental toughness. That became its own entity because the athletes loved it and people who were not athletes started hearing it and saying, Dre, this stuff applies to us, even though we don't play sports. And I branded this whole thing, Work On Your Game. And when I stopped playing pro ball in 2015, by that point, I had already started doing things like writing books and creating courses, et cetera, all of that under the Work On Your Game umbrella. And these days, that's what we do, basically help professionals and entrepreneurs with mindset, strategy, systems, and accountability, all based on performing at a high level, doing it consistently, and of course, making money in business.
Mm. And what I love is, you know, one thing that's consistent about you and I, although many things are different, is we'll work on any human being on their mind, because whether it's work or sport or it doesn't matter, because the game element, the mind element, is the universal thing behind it all. So it doesn't matter. It's the same thing. And that's wonderful. It's very transferable, isn't it? And I guess is in the last few decades of you studying this, I mean, you've been hugely prolific with all your content and your books, but there's been things emerging to you that seem the right things to leverage for people to work on their game, which I'd like to get into. But first of all, can you just give a little succinct way of how would you describe, if someone said, what do you mean my game? How would you describe that just in a short few sentences?
Sure. So everyone who does whatever you get up in the morning to do is your game. So mm-hmm. If you're a stay-at-home parent, that's your game. If you're a librarian, that is your game. If you play football, that's your game. If you run and you own a business, that is your game. So your game is the thing. If you're a professional athlete, that's your game. If you run a business, that is your game. So the game is about the area in which you are looking to and expected to perform. That's the game. And all we do in working on our games is developing our abilities to be prepared to go out there and perform, to produce results, and of course, get the rewards that we want. That's the game.
So when you say work on your game, what's the most crucial leverage point or secret sauce to the working on the game for you, Dre, and how you've seen it over the last few years?
Discipline. That's an easy one. Discipline, because the hallmark of a professional, because I work with professionals, not amateurs. So the hallmark of a professional is that the professional is always prepared ahead of time for what's going to be asked of them. They understand what the game is that they're in. So by the time they show up to the performance, whether that's showing up to work every day, showing up to your kids, to the gym, you already know what's going to be expected of you. And you've already done your homework, metaphorically speaking, so that you're ready to do what's going to be asked of you. And that is a discipline. Doing your homework is a discipline. Being prepared ahead of time is a discipline. Doing the research. So discipline is the number one trait that you will notice in any professional.
Okay, so let me ask the question with a slightly different angle. So if discipline is the main thing to working on your game, what's the secret source to discipline?
Structure. Yes. Structure creates discipline, because a lot of people will come to me, peers, and they'll say, Dre, my biggest challenge is I need to be more disciplined. And the reason people say that to me is because I talk about discipline all the time. So I get discipline challenged people. And I say, okay, well, what do you need to do to solve it? And they'll say something like, well, I need to get more motivated, or I got to push myself, or I just got to be more consistent. Basically, it's a circular reasoning. I'm not disciplined, so I got to be more disciplined. And that never works. That's the problem, that people think they need to force feed discipline upon themselves. And if you could do that, then it would work, but it doesn't work. That's the reason why if you stop 100 people on the street and ask them, hey, is there any aspect of your life in which you need to be more disciplined? Everybody would laugh at themselves and say, of course. And they would tell you what it is. No one's perfect on this. And the reason why people struggle with discipline is because they don't understand where it comes from. So structure, when you put the right structure in place, and this can also be used as, you can also say a process or a routine or a system or habits. These are all forms of structure. When you put the right structure in place and you simply follow the structure, then the discipline basically comes out of the bottom of the funnel naturally. Yeah. So a simple example of a structure is if you go to a job, you work at McDonald's, for example, they have a structure to how to make the burger. All right, so you don't have to force yourself to be disciplined in making the burger. All you have to do is follow the little pictures. And when it says cheeseburger, all you do is what it says and the cheeseburger comes out. Same thing, same way every time. The structure creates the discipline.
Yes. Right. Now, listeners, regular listeners will probably already be noticing, oh, this is different, Piers, because you don't talk about structure and discipline at all, really, in anything. You talk about the opposite of that, which is flow and all these types of things. But I do think if we go far enough back, there'll be a similarity in what we're pointing to, because working on your game's about discipline, getting discipline's about structure, because you can't force feed discipline. I totally agree with that. And then if I ask the same question the third time, what's the secret sauce to structure? What would you say to that?
Principles. Clear principles. Yes. So you have to have clear principles. And I talk to my audiences about this all the time. Principles are etched in stone, unbending, unchanging, fundamental understandings of what you're about and what you're going to bring to the table. So principles can vary from person to person, from entity to entity, family to family, business to business. But you need to know what your principles are. So, for example, McDonald's principle is about good enough food served quickly. All right, that's their principle. Whereas there's probably a high-end steakhouse in your town that is not about good enough food. It's about the highest quality food, but there's nothing in their principles that says it's going to come out fast. It's going to take its time because they have to make the quality food. Mm-hmm. So you just have to know what your foundational principles are. And when you're clear on your principles, then from there, you create the structures that will allow you to put those principles to use. Mm-hmm. And then as a result of that structure, you get the disciplines of doing things consistently that should be a clear reflection of what you're about.
Get it. So, I get your logic flow. Yeah.
Right.
Now, whereas you said you can't force feed discipline, can you force feed principles?
Can you force feed principles? Technically, yes, you can. Now, if someone's going to hold it down, if you follow extending the metaphor, maybe it depends. Let's say with kids, for example, like I have a child who's not even 2 years of age. I could shape his mind between now and the age of 7 or 8, however I want, right? Based on what I'm teaching him and what I'm telling him and what I'm demonstrating, me and my wife are demonstrating to him. So yes, we technically are kind of sort of force feeding it, but when he's old enough to think for himself, you can't really force feed things on people. They had to decide to go with it.
Right. So principles leads to structure, leads to discipline, leads to performing in your game, right? That's logic flow.
Confidence and performance and results.
Yeah. And that leads to performance and results. Brilliant. I like the, I can see it. It's the McDonald's, how to make a cheeseburger.
Now, exactly.
The key fascinating thing to me, because I wouldn't disagree with that particularly. Yeah. I guess what's interesting about what you point to and what I point to is where we start and focus on in that chain, because what I see is the bit that's even before principles, right, is principles to me, in the way I think you're describing them, emerge through obviousness for us once we get clear on what it is we're about. Okay, so you use the metaphor of, you know, in McDonald's, they know what they're about. They're about good enough food quick. Right, another restaurant's about an exquisite experience, and they're very different. But there's a clarity, and people might even call it purpose. Some people even might call it purpose. It's like, yes, this is what I'm about. And once I know what I'm about, being an elite athlete or being an entrepreneur, I can then create structure and create discipline, and off we go into results.
Right.
So what I'm fascinated in is how often, and this is just from 20, 25 years in the field of personal professional development, and this is a little bit what you said about force feeding, but what I call about people trying to reverse engineer that process. So people would see successful people having discipline, having structure, having principles. They could go, look, they've got it all. There it is. And they go, I want myself some of that, right?
Yeah.
Because that leads to... Now, reverse engineering that is hard, right? In terms of, you can't just go, well, I want to be like this, so I will be. Because the self mind gets in the way, right? And then we have to fight for discipline, or we have a resistance to what's going on versus a discipline. Whereas when it comes the other way, when it comes through what I would call realization or obviousness or inspiration, there's a organic flow from this obviousness to these principles, to this structure, to this discipline. So I really see it when it goes one way. I find it really quite hard when it goes the other way.
So it depends. It does make sense, but it depends. It depends on who's the person. Who are we talking about?
Right.
Because, so let's say someone like myself, when I became an entrepreneur, it was because I got dragged to a network marketing meeting. I ended up at a network marketing meeting, didn't know what it was. But when the speaker on the stage started talking, he was explaining these concepts of how you can make money outside of just working a regular job. I said, this all makes perfect sense. My mind was open to the new idea.
Yes.
So it was easy. It was easily, my mind was easily malleable. It was malleable and open to these new concepts because I have a business degree. I was in college at the time, and the things they were teaching in school were nothing like what this guy was saying on the stage, even though what he was saying made perfect sense. So I said, why aren't they teaching this in school? I immediately started questioning what I was learning in college when I heard what this guy said on the stage, whereas other people could go to that same meeting and they immediately reject what the guy's saying on the stage because they've been brain with the stuff they've been taught at school. So it depends on who the person is and where their mind is at that moment.
Right. And I'm going to say, I see what you're saying. And I think the difference there, and I think now what makes sense to me, is that all change comes from what I'm going to call realization. So, and realization I define as the capacity for one set of thinking and mindsets and perspectives to dissolve and a new one to arise. Now, when you were sitting in that seminar, the network marketing thing, and you heard this, one way of seeing dissolved and a new way came up, right?
That's
so you were like, what am I doing on that? All that stuff in the college? I see this now. So there was a realization, it pinged for you, if you like. Now, other people sitting next to you in that room may not have had their realization, right?
That's right.
So, you know, maybe like 5% people did and 95 didn't. I don't know what the number is, it doesn't matter. But so therefore, the capacity for realization is key at the beginning of this sequence of what we're calling principles, structure, discipline, results. So where I focus my work now on is what increases the capacity for realization.
Okay.
Because if we have more realizations, everything else in that chain can happen.
That's right.
If we're really stuck in our funk, in our little minds that are contracted, we're not really going to have many realizations.
Agreed.
So I've got more and more curious about what is behind the capacity for realization, not actually the content of people's realizations. I mean, that's kind of nice. Like, oh, I had a realization that I can give up smoking. It's quite easy. I'm not so interested in people's contents of their realization. It's the capacity for realization.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, I get that. And a couple of things I'd say. So on the logical side of things, let's say, for example, have you ever done any training on like webinars or how people do sales presentation from stages? One of the things that we intentionally do is, and this is what the guy at the network marketing meeting was doing, is you need to pull up people's beliefs about a certain thing, the things that they need to stop believing in order to listen to your message. And you immediately call them out on those things and you break their false beliefs. You do that on purpose. Mm. So a lot of speakers who sell from the stage, that's what they do. Their whole presentation is about, let me give you three things that you think are true, but they're not true. Yeah. I'm going to tell you why they're not true. And now that your mind is open in this moment of vulnerability, so to speak, now I'm going to tell you the thing that is true. And now, and to get the thing that is true, you got to buy my product. All right. And that's kind of the, yeah, one of the things that good salespeople do. You got to break people's false beliefs. So that's something that I do all the time in my own content. I'm breaking people's false beliefs. I tell you why what you think is not true, and then I explain it. Then I tell you why I know what I'm talking about. And then if you can push back and tell me I'm wrong, or tell me how I'm wrong.
Right.
I'm going to tell my audience that. So that's a way of doing it.
And we can see in the human capacity that that works sometimes and doesn't other times, right? So if, yes, I was about to tell you in the next 30 seconds why soccer's better than basketball, doesn't, mm-hmm, really matter what I say, you're probably not going to change your mind, right? I'm guessing as an ex basketball player, and you know,
it depends on which false beliefs of mine you can break.
Right, but what I mean is
generally, yes,
so,
I agree.
So some of them will go, some of them won't.
Right.
And so we realize that that can happen, and I think it's the biggest superpower of the human being that we can have realization that some of those beliefs can dissolve and some, you know, new ones can arise. And, mm-hmm, if you look at the human condition, I always think if you were talking to a Martian, right, an alien, and they were looking at us and they were going, okay, I can see you guys can change your minds. I see you guys can get realizations. You can get new structures and disciplines. How does that happen, right? The alien, mm, might go, it seems to work better with the little people. Kids are realization machines,
mm-hmm,
right? Small children are realizing all the time, bang, 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 bang. And they get inspired really easily. They're coming running up to you and go, guess what? Wow. And you could see the energy and the glint in their eye as they've seen something new, and their curiosity is abundant. And it would look like the sort of generally more we get into teenage and adult and whatever, that our realizations are less frequent.
Yes.
It could look like that. Or, mm-hmm, the harder work to change. So, yeah, we go back to see, well, what is it about, if the Martian was asking us, what is it about those kids that means they are just learning machines that they can just realize? And the thing that I've spotted, which is at the core of what I do in my work, is seeing there's one big difference. And that is the relationship they have to what I'm going to call the self, mm-hmm, the idea of them, and even what reality is. I mean, that's quite a profound thing to say, but they have a very different relationship to what they think they are versus us more grown-up people who have started to see that we are this self. We are a separate, finite thing that needs to go into the world and succeed and seek and protect. They are more part of the system, if you want to call it that, right? And when they're tiny, I mean, I know you've got just a little boy who's just turning two, but it was only a few months ago that he wouldn't even known his name. He wouldn't even know he was a separate self, right? He was just part of, he was even probably staring at his limbs, his hands and his feet, just going, what is this, right? That there was nothing born into him that made him separate. That gets learned.
Yes. Right?
That gets learned in. And then we learn to self-identify with that as us. Tiny kids, infants, don't do that. When they first get a name, they refer to themselves in the third person.
You know, they'll
say, yeah, daddy's, yes, cup. Or, mm-hmm, and if you show them a photo of him or in the mirror, kind of point to it like going, is that, what is that, right? That's you. That's me. Oh, right. So this idea of them being this separate entity is new news for mm-hmm. the, you know, after the first few months. And what I find fascinating then, just taking what that means, is we've over-identified with the self, the separate self. And when we do that, we self-identify with the idea of the world and our resourcefulness having to be something that we have to go and get, right? Rather than being something that comes through. So the capacity for realization, which we talked about just a minute ago, is inbuilt inherently into us. The reason why we're not as fertile to see them is when we're self-identified with our thoughts and perceptions about what we are or about the world. Right. Now, I can go into this a lot more, but does that make any sense at any level when I just say that? That's what's the problem is. We've self-identified with us being separate to the system, to the world, and that's what gets in our way of fertility.
It does make sense. It does make sense that as we, the way that I would see it, the way I would word it is, the older we get and the more experienced we get, the more hardened that idea of who we are and what we represent in the world becomes. And it's just harder to break that mold because the longer it goes, the stronger the mold gets.
Right.
So it's less malleable the older we get. And this is why some people will say, I'm stuck in my ways. And it's when they know they could do something different and you're telling them what the different thing is and they're experiencing this cognitive dissonance
yes.
between what they know they could do different and what they don't want to do. And their excuse is, I'm stuck in my ways. They don't want to change, even though they know they could. So that's the way people kind of rationalize it by saying that I am who I am, you know, and they don't want to do anything different, even though they know they could. And it's also the physical pain, meaning the work they would have to do to undo what they've already come to believe and believe something different. And the emotional pain that goes with detaching from this identity that they have accepted over the last 20 years and accepting a new identity, not only looking in the mirror and knowing that they've chosen a new identity, but also thinking about what is everybody else going to think about me if I step into this new identity. That's why it's harder to get an older person. An older can just be in the mind, not necessarily candles on the cake. That older person to change their identity or change their actions relative to their identity simply because they've been doing the same thing for so long that it's hard to break the inertia.
Right. And I would agree with what you just said. And I think all of that is a symptom of one massive misunderstanding. So everything you've just said, which I now see clearer and clearer and clearer and clearer, and the misunderstanding is the case of mistaken identity.
That's right.
Right? Because if we think what we are is this self that has set thoughts, will suffer pain, needs to be like this, needs people to think it's like that. If that's what we think we are, which at one level we are, at an avatar level we are, but if we think that's what we are essentially, fundamentally, then no wonder it's going to be difficult to change it. Because we don't see that presenting self, that thing in the mirror, that thing when I look down and look at my hand, that thing that says, hey, your peers, is psychological. It's thought-based, perception-based. It happens in psychology. It's an activity of a wider mind, a universal mind. It's not what we are fundamentally. So the case of mistaken identity, which is the biggest misunderstanding that holds us back in the world, is that we believe we are this self that appears rather than, to use a fancy word, the consciousness, the awareness that is aware of that self. And the way to check this out is very, very simple. If I go back to the alien analogy, if the alien said, what is it about you that never, ever changes? What is it about you that is eternal, consistent, universal? And just have a look into your current experience, into this moment, this very moment right now. And what is it that never changes? And you didn't know anything else about the human psychology. What would you say it is about us that never, ever changes?
About human beings?
Yeah, about any of us. So the thing that never, ever comes and goes that's completely consistent and eternal. If you look in direct experience, direct inquiry, what would you say?
Is this referring to people who are alive, or is this include
just dead? You right now, let's say, but to everyone, but you right now as a representative of the mankind, right?
Mm-hmm.
What would you say is the only thing about us that doesn't come and go?
No, the first thing that came to mind is like our bones, our skeleton.
Okay. Yeah. Now, your experience of having a body comes and goes.
Yes.
So in the last 30 minutes that we've been talking, occasionally you might have noticed you're sitting on a chair or you notice your hand, right? So that comes and goes. Yeah. That's not always there. So we know the body, although it looks consistent, comes and goes in experience, in our moment to moment experience.
Yes.
So what is there that never changes?
Then I would just say our consciousness of our existence.
Right. Now, which is a fancy way of saying there is something that is aware of my body, ears, Dre, a thought, a perception, an image, a sensation. There is the content of all the things I think and feel and perceive, including my body, including this thing called peers. There's something that's aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
The short word for that is I.
Yes.
Now,
correct.
We think, because we've been told by science for 300 years, that I starts in the brain.
Right.
Right? And it's made of matter. It's made of atoms and molecules.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the lovely, lovely question that I just find so fascinating. That me that I think is the thing having my thoughts, I'm actually aware of that. I'm aware of peers. So if I'm aware of peers, I can't be essentially peers. There must be something before that, right? And this world I see of my bones and skins and skeletons and all that kind of stuff, again, I'm aware of that. So there must be something that's there before that is pre what I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And no one's ever experienced atoms and molecules and brains without the mind. So this consciousness that we've been told comes from the brain. A, no scientist has ever found it in the brain. They can't find it. They can find how it lights up, but they can't find the source. That's called the hard problem of consciousness. 20, 30 years, they can't find it. They break matter down into smaller and smaller people. They can't find it. And in direct experience, just you and I, normal people, without being scientists, without a big microscope, we can't find it either. All we can find is awareness itself, and then things arising in awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this idea that we're separate is a thought. This idea that I'm me, Piers, that was born in my case 50 years ago, right? That's a very consistent thought. It's not fundamental. So the thing that never changes about us is that I am awareness itself, not my thoughts, feelings, and perceptions.
Okay, I accept that.
Right. Now, you can see that. So then everyone goes, well, so what? So what? That sounds too scientific. It sounds too philosophical. It sounds too whatever, irrelevant, right? What's this got to do with this? Well, now we start to see where the ability to have realizations and obviousness and resourcefulness and human potential and resilience and love and creativity come from, because that's where the rubber hits the road and all those lovely things. And you start to see that they are not properties of the self. They are intrinsic in the system. So just take an example of what I might call it flow state or in the zone. A sports person, a singing, dancing, business person, someone cooking, someone chatting to their friends. They might talk about being in flow, right? Really on just beautifully in tune with everything.
Mm-hmm.
They would describe an absence of self and discipline in that moment. It's just happening.
That's right.
It's just happening. It's just like, it came through me. I don't know how I did it. I just did my best time ever. Or I was just in it. It was just, I lost myself in the game.
Yes.
Like I lost myself in a great book. So the self's not there in that moment. Yeah. It's intrinsic in the system. And then what the self does, it comes in and it takes credit for that. Right. So you even take having a beautiful moment with your wife or your son or a sunset. In that moment, you're not there, the self, Dre. Then afterwards, Dre goes, what a lovely moment, right? Mm-hmm. And creates credit going, that was me. And that's like when you interview great sports people after they've done something, they go, how do you do that? They kind of don't know. They go, I don't know. And then the interview goes, well, you must know. And they go, oh, it's because I did this. You know, they make something up, right? Mm-hmm. So what I'm pointing to is to see that if we can see we are the system, not the self, we have these superpowers available that sit innately in our system. Now, the challenge that we have is why we get resistance to things. So, you know, you're saying some people, the older they get, the harder they go, I'm just stuck in my ways. Is because that self has identified with a piece of experience, with a thought, and it's resisting the isness of what's going on. There's a degree of protecting or seeking of the self, which is why when people really, really want something, it often doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Neutrality helps, or why people are protecting something, they struggle. So when the self seeks or protects because it thinks it's not part of the system, it goes into this finite thing, right? It thinks all it is this separate thing that the world's happening to. Oh, I've got to protect myself from whatever. It forgets what it is. It's like Clark Kent forgetting he's Superman, right? And then he's operating just as Clark Kent, not realizing he can take his jacket off and this resilience and creativity and flow is there. So what I'm pointing people to try and undo in Quality of Mind and before psychology is to undo that fundamental misunderstanding of what we are. Now, I've just talked a lot. I'd love to hear what you hear in all of that.
So what's fresh in my mind from the last thing that you said is what you chase runs away from you. So this is something that I've heard in business. People talk about this often. People are trying to make something happen in business. If you chase after the money and the money runs away, it's harder to make it. But when you put yourself in the frame of mind that you already have it, more of it comes to you. And something I even said this to young men. I say, you notice that when we have a girlfriend or a wife, it looks like every time you go to the mall with your girlfriend or wife, all the girls are looking at you. But when you were single, nobody was noticing you. Right. Mm. And the only thing that changed is now because you have the spirit of you already have the woman. Now all the women want you. But when you had the spirit of you don't have a woman and you're looking for one, it seems like none of them are noticing. None of them are paying attention. So when you step into that energy of I already have it, then it seems like it all starts to flow in your direction. So
Because there's no seeking there. And I would agree with you because the thing that's missing there, in the first one, they were seeking the money or the girl or the success, seeking on behalf of this separate self, right?
Right.
Therefore, you're in scarcity, right?
Yes.
And that vibrates differently to being just at peace abundance. With whatever, right? Or abundance, you could call it that. So, and again, only the separate self can seek.
Right.
Without a belief in the separate self being fundamental, we wouldn't seek.
Right. So even going to an even more logical, rational way of thinking, as I'm a super logical thinker, can't tell, is the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Right. And I talk to my audience about this all the time, that the reason why when a person is poor and they're standing on the corner begging for money, they can barely get a couple of dollars a day. But when a person is rich, they go to the highest end restaurant in town. They don't have to pay. Mm. Why would you make that person not pay? They're the person who can most afford to pay. Yeah. They don't have to pay because they have the energy that already have it. So it seems like everybody wants to give them things. But when you don't have anything, nobody wants to give you anything, even though they're the ones who most need it.
Yeah.
Right. So it's funny like that. And
it is. And let's just take that a little further. You take someone who's got lots of money. Mm-hmm. So they've got abundance on the money, yet they're deeply unhappy. Mm-hmm. And we all know that money doesn't buy happiness. We know that so now what is going on for them? So for them, they are still seeking happiness or okayness or validity or whatever. So on money, they have an abundance, but on happiness, they're seeking and they keep looking for it in relationships or material possessions or status or whatever it is. They're seeking, and they're like, well, I thought it would come with money and it hasn't come with money, so where is it? Whereas someone else with a tenth of the wealth of them is at peace and well-being. So the commonality there is there a seeking from this self? Now, what's really fascinating about seeking, I find, is sometimes when we achieve a result, we feel great, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe a promotion at work or a new business deal or some success in sport.
Right.
And for a while, we feel really great. And then guess what? We want the next trophy or bank balance or relationship, because the reason we felt good wasn't because we got the thing. It was because when the self stopped seeking, we fell back into our innate organic okayness. So it wasn't the result of the thing that created the well-being and the okayness. It was the stopping of seeking. And then when the seeking starts up again, because the self mind has, it wants a new achievement, it starts feeling like life needs to happen again. And then when they achieve that, they get a little bit of stability again, and then it carries on, and it's the rat race. It's the hamster wheel.
Yes. So
if we can see that it's the seeking mind that's the, and it's, that's to do with our misunderstanding of what we are, is what causes our suffering and our lack of resourcefulness.
Yes. And a couple of things there. So one of the coaches for the Chicago Bulls, when Michael Jordan played, he would say that you're only a success in the moment when you are going after the success. As soon as they hand you the trophy, you're no longer a success, because in that moment you're chasing after, what you're doing is you're trying to get the trophy. But as soon as you get it, then the success has already been achieved, and you're successful when you're going after a worthy ideal. That's what Earl Nightingale says in the Stranger's Secret. And the other thing, that in the big picture of everything that you said there, the longer part there, Piers, is that if you can get people to understand what you explained there, because I get it, I couldn't language it the same way that you did, but if you can get people to understand that, that can be, this can be very valuable to in the big picture, to like the masses of people. The masses probably wouldn't have the patience to sit through and understand what you're saying, as you had to say it over and over again.
Yeah. Tell me about it. This is the story of my career, in that I realize I am talking to the few people that have a resonance with this. Now that's growing, I hope and believe. But you know, you were sitting in that room of 100 people in the seminar, and you just went boom, you know. So you're right. A lot of people are so caught up in the self-seeking, particularly in the Western world, particularly in the last few decades, the deification of the self, they find it really hard to hear what I'm on about.
Yes.
So I would agree with you. It's not a common mainstream message, but I believe there's still enough people who are curious, and there is what we will start to see, and you can already see it in society, which is creaking. What I mean, creaking, there's things that aren't great about our society, whether it's in the environment or the economy or wars. It's because at a meta level, we are misidentified with who we are. And it's all me, not we. It's all like, how can I get more of this? How can I secure myself? What's wrong with them? Whereas if we can see we are the system, that's going to make a game change of difference.
Yeah, so a couple things on that is a question of with what you just said is, number one, are you, and this is something that I tell people all the time, you have to make the choice. Are you looking to talk to the converted, or are you looking to convert? Because if you're talking to the converted, then you're talking to the small percentage of people who kind of get it and see it and understand it, the one out of 100 in the room. Or, and this would require a change in the way that you deliver the message, do you want it to be dumbed it down, for lack of a better term, enough that the masses of people can get it, and maybe you can convert some of those people and bring them over to where you're at? That's really just a question for what you want to do.
Sure. Message. And it's a great question. And I would say I bounce around a little bit in between that, because to me, here's the challenge. And this is just my perception. It's not right, but it's just my perception. When you, to use your phrase, dumb it down, most people don't hear. So there's a beautiful challenge of being pure and non-diluting, because then people, that makes it harder to hear, possibly. So you're reducing it. But if you make it too mainstream, People then will hear it according to their own filter. So a little metaphor would be you're teaching someone to swim to show them they can float, and you keep chucking something like a life preserver in, they'll grab it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really want them to float, you have to kind of go, well, you don't need anything thrown in the water right now. So often I used to throw people bones the whole time of their old way just to help them get a little bit of a life preserver. And they go, oh, what he really means is this. So now I tend to go a bit purer, more direct. And I'll lose people all the time, and that's okay. Because I still think for the simplicity, when people do start to switch on, it doesn't take long. It's not a 20-year path. It can be 20 minutes of hearing it in the right way. People are like, bang. All they need is that inkling, a little inkling. There's something different here in what we're saying. And when they have a little inkling, they get a bit of intrigue. When they get a bit of intrigue, hopefully that creates a bit of curiosity. When we point them directly, a little bit more. So I would agree. It's not in the full mainstream yet that I'm going after the audience, but hopefully there's enough people listening out there who realize there's something fresh.
And what I would think you could do is, I mean, as a, just my sales mind is thinking about what is the end game. If someone is able to capture this and bottle it up, what's the result? What do they get out of it? And if you can just pitch them on a result, now that you have their attention, now you can give them everything else. It's like feeding the medicine to a dog, right? So you got to lure them in with the deli meat, and then you give them the medicine.
Oh, totally. And the end game is, you know, psychological freedom, flow, creativity, love, everything they're looking for, right? So most people in the world are looking for happiness.
They're looking for
happiness and well-being on the inside and harmony on the outside, right?
Yeah, well, they're looking for tangible things, things that they can count, measure, hold in their hands.
Well, I don't know, because it's interesting. I think everyone's really chasing a feeling.
Yes, they are. But they don't.
Now, they think the object.
They don't label it that way. No. They say, I'm trying to make more money. I want to be in better shape. I want to find the right partner. Yeah. I want to be more successful. I want to lose weight.
But you only have to ask someone one or two questions to say, if you got that Mercedes or that Ferrari or that business or that relationship, what would it give you?
Right. And
it doesn't take you long for them to get to a feeling.
Correct. But they won't even come to the conversation unless you meet them where they're at.
Right.
That's the challenge.
Yeah, it's the challenge. And some people are seeking things in the external world. Some people are seeking things in the internal world. I just want a peace of mind. I just want more security. Now, the external world, people are seeking money, you know, or relationships or businesses or whatever. People on the internal world are seeking security or positivity or a calm mind. And I'm actually saying, hey, there's something else more than that. There's something where we can be okay regardless to the external world and regardless to the internal world, right? Mm. So you don't even have to be like full of positive thoughts to be okay. There's a place we are, and it's where the one-year-old is. It's where the six-month-old is, where they are okay regardless to the external world, regardless to the internal world. Now that is where freedom lives.
That's true. Right?
Now, that's quite a profound thing to say. And for people chasing a Ferrari, that doesn't sound that sexy. But I'm saying fundamentally, human beings, that's what we're after.
I agree with that. And the way that we've had this conversation over the course of an hour, if you can get someone's attention and keep it, you can get them to understand this part.
Yeah.
The question is, how do you get them there? That's the challenge.
Yeah, it is. And all I can say is I hope they listen to you and I or someone like you and I talking, and it's a little something, and they go, huh, what's he on about, right? Is there something more for me in there? And it's just through little tiny little insights of that. That's the only way it occurs to me in my little world. So that people hear something, they what I call resonate, and that resonance creates an intrigue, and then they get curious, and the there's a slight melting of their, oh, right. And then you get sticky intrigue. So Dre, I'm very, very conscious of your valuable time. So I want to just see, I really appreciate you being in this conversation, but how would you like to put a bow on this? What would you like to say at the end to wrap this up for people? What would be valuable from your end?
Well, I mean, it was a lot. And this is a different kind of conversation. I've done hundreds of these interviews. This is a different one, different type than what I've done in the past. But this was very valuable. And what I would say to the audience is, and these are people who are, I think they already understand where you're coming from and what you're doing. I would say, think about how, if you couldn't bottle up what Piers and I have been discussing here, how that could make it easier for you to achieve the conscious mind things that we tend to think about most of the days. And when we write down our goals, those are usually things tangible, measurement, check the box, yes or no. How could getting into that state, and if you could bottle up that flow state and get into that zone that you could get there consistently, how could that better help you get to the goals that you want to reach? And because there is a ton of value in that. And again, you have, it has to be someone who has the mental capacity to take all this in and really play around with it in their minds, because this is not what we're taught in school. This is not is what's in most mainstream books. This is not the most popular content you're going to find online. So we have been inundated with that stuff. So someone has to have the capacity to even listen to this and consider it in order for it to get through, because most people don't think like this all day, every day.
I'm so glad you said that, because this can sound profound and irrelevant, but it's also deeply practical and will enable people to have more of that stuff in life. So generally two things happen when people have this understanding. They drop a lot of their goals because they realize they didn't need them, but the ones that were truly true for them come online. Right. So it doesn't, like, you don't become inert in life. No way, no way, no way. You become, you get your goals, synchronicity, serendipity, freedom come. So all those real world things still turn up, but you also drop a lot of goals because you realize you were chasing a dream that you didn't need. And actually there's something else there more fruitful. So it's profound yet practical. So I love what you said at the end there. So thank you for that. And I appreciate your engagement with this, Dre. Although we're coming from very different ends, I knew there'd be something in the middle that was kind of like, yeah, I can see what you're on about, Piers. It's just a different way to how I go. So thank you. I appreciate you.
There's definitely a different approach, and I appreciate this conversation. This has been, it's opened my eyes to a few things as well. So I appreciate it.
Thank you. Carry on doing all the great stuff you do. So thank you. And maybe we might connect again soon. Who knows? Until then, thank you for your time. And listeners, I'd like to say, just have fun being curious and exploring. And if you want to know more about Dre, obviously I'm going to drop his stuff in the show notes, and he's got a load of content if you want to get into structures and disciplines and all that kind of stuff. So Dre, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on. Thanks for sharing your platform.
Listeners, as usual, have fun being curious and catch you next time.
If you enjoyed listening to this podcast and want to know more, check out our website at qualityofmind.biz. And also, feel free to reach out and leave us a review or a comment. Until next time, have fun being curious.